This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk, and today I'm talking to Jovita Bidlowska.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me in Writer's Cast.
Oh, very happy to have you. We're talking about your book called Drunk Mom, which is an amazing title, I have to say. It just grabs your attention right away. This is a memoir. So very personal. Maybe you could talk, the background, of course, is that this is about your alcoholism and your recovery from alcoholism taking place right around the time that your son, your son was born. So I guess the first question I have is, and I want to tell you that I think the writing in this book is incredibly beautiful and powerful. And I, it's also a tough subject that obviously, is hard for, I'm sure it's hard for a lot of people to read. But maybe you could just talk a little bit about why you wrote the book.
Sure. Lots of great questions. I'll go back to the title because I just wanted to address that quickly because the title comes from me naming that document that was at in the beginning work of fiction, naming it Drunk Mom, kind of a tongue-in-cheek because, you know how you name documents on your desktop, so you could call it Stupid Essay Number One or, Crazy Book I'm Writing. So anyway, so Drunk Mom was kind of a joke, but it ended up being a title. So that's a, I think that's an interesting thing about the book in itself is that, it was always, originally it was always supposed to be something else than it ended up being. So with the book itself, I started writing as fiction. So I was, I guess, in the beginning of my relapse and having a hard time dealing with relapse itself, but also admitting that that was what was going on. And I was working on a novel, and that wasn't going very well. So I thought, well, I need some inspiration to write something else to try my hand at writing fiction again and at writing in general. And I thought, okay, well, I have a great subject and I have a great idea for a story. It would be about a sort of an ordinary, urban mom who drinks. I have this special insight into it because that was what was happening in my life. So it did start as work of fiction. And it almost served not as a diary, but I was taking a lot of notes for my book, for my novel, and in a memoir and real life. Eventually, I go to rehab, and I brought my notebook there to take notes there as well, and all of that, while being in this deep denial about what was really going on in my life, and telling myself that I was writing a novel. So I don't know if that answers the question why I started writing the book, but definitely how I started writing it. And go on, sorry.
Yeah, no. So this, I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't actually thought about the process, but you were before sort of the time that the book takes place. You had been a writer.
Yes.
I mean, you are a writer. So yeah. I mean, but you had written before.
Yes.
So it isn't. So the writing that was going on during the time that the book, the story itself takes place, the story of your life. So that's that's interesting. So that are some of the passages that are in the book about being drunk and what it feels like, and about the desire that you felt for alcohol. Was that contemporaneous, or did you go back subsequently and write those passages thinking back to how you felt then? I think that's actually an interesting question.
No, I definitely went back. It wasn't, I wasn't sort of getting up from blackouts and trying to describe them. The thing about being in the middle of addiction is that it's very immediate, right? So it's, you kind of don't have time to do a lot of self-reflection. So, me taking notes about what was going on was more Noticing things like things that people said to me. So, I was a new mom, so people had a lot of advice on how new motherhood should look like. So I would write down things I was hearing from other women, for example, or women in my family. I was describing things for my novels. I was describing things like, when I would go into a liquor store and I would be dazzled by all the colors and shapes of bottles. So things like that I did, put down on paper, but the actual going back to, the event of being drunk or coming out of a blackout or waking up, the day after, not knowing what happened, all of that was, trying to remember how that was. So.
Right, because obviously, for the moment, for the times when you are at the worst, alcohol does not leave, it does not lend itself to you making sense as a writer. I mean, I think that makes, that's clear that, the if you're really sick, you're not going to be able to write. Yeah, that's it's just it's sort of an intriguing to think about how, how one does figure that out. But I, the when you were, and one of the tensions in throughout the book, I thought, was whether your child was being affected physically, whether during that period when you were really drinking the most and your son was a newborn. You were breastfeeding, you were trying to figure out how to, your impulse to care for him never wavered, but you were drunk a lot. And it seems like, that must have been very difficult.
Well, certainly was. I think most of all for my husband. I mean, at the time, because he kind of had to, pick up all the slack and be both a father and a mother to my newborn. On my part, what I was attempting to do was, it's I think the thing about addiction is that the people who are active in their addiction try to lead these, double lives, right? Where on one hand, they're completely animal-like and sort of respond only to their cravings and desires for the next fix, and on the other hand, they try to, keep up appearances of being. And again, this is just my opinion, but I'm talking about my own experience, and keep up the appearances of being, of living their lives as the world sees them living those lives. So in my case, I was out, to the world. I was a mom, and I certainly wanted to be a mom, and I certainly believed, that I was a good mom. And on the other hand, I had to deal with the reality of, things like breastfeeding. So I would, set up alarms on my laptop. I was always out with my laptop to know when, when it would be okay to breastfeed my son. Of course, I could not possibly claim, 100% success rate that he was always safe from me, I guess, poisoning him even to a point. But and then I ended up doing things like, buying bottles of formula in secret because people thought I was this great, new mom breastfeeding and being with him all the time. And in secret I would, feed him formula more than what we were, outwardly, I guess, feeding him. So there was a lot of, this sort of trying to juggle my addiction and my, my motherhood. And of course I was, I was certainly aware of endangering him a few times. I think part of, me successfully recovering from that time and just, everyone surviving is the fact that I did have two people around me almost at all times, and that was my husband and my sister, who certainly, picked up where I left off. And I mean, they were there the entire time. So yeah, that's very lucky for me and for everyone else. And yeah, it's
Yeah, and I don't want to give away too much of what happens in the book because, you know, I think people should read for themselves, and it is a story with a beginning and a middle and an end. But obviously, you do recover in the book, and you had the, you know, the two people that you just mentioned who are with you also had to go through their own experience of your addiction and their response to it and how they would. You know, how they participated. I mean, you don't talk about codependency and you don't really talk about, you know, their part, anybody else's part in your addiction. You know, you don't shift any blame and you don't really address that. But clearly they had to know what was going on and they were taking care of you and you know, but also by doing that, enabling you to not recognize till you were ready, which
I don't know if I agree with that.
No,
I'm not a fan of the word enabling. So, I guess I don't agree with that because you know, no one has a manual on how to deal with an addict, right? Just as they don't have a manual on how to be, you know, first time parent. I mean, it's one of those things where you throw loved ones into an absolute chaos. I mean, it's a, you know, it's almost like a state of war. You have zero instructions. So, you know, is it tough love or do you kick someone out or do you pretend that it's not happening? I mean, no one knows how to deal with it. And unfortunately, I mean, some people do because they repeatedly go through the cycle of, you know, having their loved one relapse and get better and relapse and get better. And, you know, it's kind of, that could be an ongoing nightmare. But in terms of, you know, my sister and my husband, I mean, they had no idea. They just did the best they could. And, you know, you're saying that they were taking care of me. They were taking care of me and a brand new baby. I mean, I would never use the word enabling in that case.
No, fair enough. You know, I didn't mean, though, by that to imply that they were, you know, actively enabling. I guess I just meant that because they were there to take care of you and your baby, that did enable you to continue.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Yeah.
On your path.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, I don't mean, in, you know, I think there is a implication, and I clearly understand that, you know, I don't mean to imply that they were, you know, in some way responsible, because I don't think that's fair.
No, you're right. No, I think exactly that's how I took it. I just thought, because it's, especially in the world of addiction and you know, using certain language, that's why I thought, oh, no, this is not the, but I understand what you're saying. So, yes, I agree with you that, you know, them being around certainly, I don't know if it made it easier, but made it safer anyway.
And good in some ways, because obviously you were pretty out there and they were, and you know, when you're that out there, I imagine, and I don't know this, but it feels like it from your writing, that you are, you know, you're in blackout, you're unconscious, you don't know what's happened. You have memory loss. You don't even know what you've done. And you express that. I mean, I thought that was, you know, frightening, and must have been. It must be frightening to you in some way to re-experience it. I mean, I don't know what it was like for you to write this book, but I imagine, you know, facing yourself.
Yeah,
has to be very painful at points.
Yeah. No, I mean, writing it wasn't. Writing it wasn't that difficult because I already had a distance to it, you know, writing it as work of fiction. And then when I ended up, you know, turning it into a memoir, I was kind of in that almost, you know, auto mode of just writing, describing these experiences and treating these as a writing exercise. As you know, I'm a writer. I was just reporting on things. I mean, as much as you can use the word reporting when it comes to that. So I was very detached from it when I was writing it. When I was reading it and doing revisions, that was a very difficult time, you know. And even because the book came out in Canada in 2013, so I have done some public readings, and you know, even reading to an audience, I would say it almost compares to coming out of a blackout, because I read it and I think, oh my God, I had, you know, it's really emotionally charged for me, all of a sudden, you know?
So, yes. Well, yeah. And it, I mean, was that, I mean, it is a process of making public something about yourself that's very painful and kind of difficult for you to confront. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how do you... You must, I don't know, I don't even know how to express this question, but to be willing and able to show yourself in this way takes a lot of courage and willingness to be judged and be discussed. And, you know, it's sort of amazing to me that you're able to have that strength.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for saying that. I don't know if it's... If it's courage, it's one of those things where, you know, I certainly wanted to write this book for, well, I mean, primarily because I'm a writer, because it was an interesting story to me, and because, you know, there were personal reasons. I mean, I even, there's part of me that treats it as sort of amends to my son, and almost, you know, coming out and saying, you know, this is what happened, and I'm going to admit in front of the whole world of how things were. But I also think that, you know, there is part of, I guess, almost service of a sober addict. You know, if you have an ability to tell your story, and if you have an ability to tell it in an original way, and you know, follow up with addressing questions and even discussing addiction, I think it's a fair thing to do. It's a good thing to do to not shy away from something that's very difficult, and not everyone can, you know, share that sort of experience. I don't have very tough skin at all. I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm enjoying the mostly negative attention, and I'm just referring to some follow-ups in Canada. But I certainly, you know, I stand behind my story. It's something I think should be talked about. We have very many people, you know, dying from addiction, and not just from addiction, but from being secretive about it, you know? I mean, it's a few months ago we had, you know, someone like David Seymour Hoffman, you know, found in his apartment after 23 years of sobriety, you know, with a needle in his arm, and no one had any idea, because that's part of the addiction. We keep it secret, and the more we keep it secret, the more people die, I think, and I think it's an important thing to talk about publicly. So.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, what's interesting too, though, is and you AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, has been your path to sobriety, and you talk mm-hmm. about that in the book. But in fact, it's interesting that those meetings have to be private to give people the mm-hmm. opportunity to share in a safe environment. So mm-hmm. that they, you know, because secrecy, again, it is important for people who are confronting their addiction to have a supportive space to do it in. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, in AA, you have to be, well, it's all private. You don't share what happens, you know, with a particular, you know, that doesn't become public, but your book then is an opportunity for us to see, and for others who have addictions, to see what it really feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I'm, you know, I am breaking my anonymity as a member of you know, Alcoholics Anonymous,
right?
But it's certainly just a personal choice. You know, I wouldn't break someone else's, and you know, it's again, you know, with AA, should it? I mean, that's more of a political issue, but should it be anonymous in this day and age when we suddenly, you know, find out that there are so many secret addicts? I don't know, and you know, that's not for me to answer, but you're right that there needs to be a space where people, you know, have to express, you know, the darkness of addiction, and the way meetings are set up, you know, you often have someone speaking in front of an audience or to, you know, other people in a group and talking about very difficult things. So perhaps I even come, you know, subconsciously I've picked that up in AA, you know, this idea of sharing a story with a group of people. So.
Oh, that's actually good. No, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. That, in fact, this is for you an extension of the mm-hmm. work you've done, you know, and it may be that that's important mm-hmm. for you personally, you know, that in a way that other, you know, maybe other people don't have the ability to write, but mm-hmm. also you have the ability to share yourself in this way. You know, maybe, and probably a lot of other people who have been addicted or who are addicts cannot. So, well, I wanted to ask you about, you know, since your background is that you came to America, to Canada from Poland, so English is your second language, and yet you're, I think, a very powerful writer in English. How long have you, at what age did you come to America, and how do you feel writing, you know, what does it feel like expressing yourself in your second language?
I was a teenager. I was 15, and I didn't know a word of English when I first moved here. But I always wrote, and it was sort of my first way of communicating with the world in English. I remember taking English as a second language classes right away after we moved here, and it was maybe, you know, 6 months into that where I tried to write my first short story. It was terrible, but I remember wanting to, because I wasn't able to speak the language yet. I couldn't even, you know, pronounce most of the words, but I wanted to, you know, be able to express myself in this other language. So I think that's, I don't know. I mean, I remember thinking that was almost a decision I was making, that if I were to write, it would have to be in English, and I would have to really put all my efforts and you know, even the way one thinks of sentences or the one, you know, picks up dialogue or something, you know, all those little notes we make to write stories in the future, it would have to be in English, and I would have to structure it in English. So I don't know if I abandoned Polish. I just kind of, like I said, made that choice, and and so, yeah, it sort of went on from there. I mean, I didn't study English in university. I have a degree in psychology, but, you know, I remember coming into my 20s and thinking I would actually like to do more with it. And I published my first short story in a small paper and things like that. So, yeah, we went from there.
So do you feel like you want to write fiction as well as memoir?
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, I'm working on a couple works of fiction, and you know, we've my agent sent out a couple things to publishers, so just waiting right now. But I'm constantly writing, and I don't think there's going to be any more memoirs in the future.
So, do you feel that you've exhausted the subject of addiction? And I mean, not just in your own personal story, but in your writing. I mean, is it, you've done this, it's now closed chapter, you know, move on and do something different, or do you still think that the nature of addiction and personal response to it and the ability to function in the world, I mean, are any of those issues kind of things that you would carry over into future work?
Yeah, I mean, my background is in journalism, so I do work, you know, freelances where, you know, writing features and things like that. So I have been writing about addiction a lot, because people seem to, you know, get in touch with me about it, and then all I would pitch them with some stories. I do find it a very fascinating subject, and maybe because we still don't have, you know, a definition of what it is, that's a common definition. You know, some people say it's a disease, some people say it's a, you know, spiritual malady, that's what they say in AA, some people say it's a condition or affliction. I mean, we can't even agree on what it is and where it comes from and why it is. So so I think it's kind of a bottomless subject to write about. And then there's also all these, you know, very practical things connected to it, you know, the ways of, you know, what sort of therapy works, or does therapy work at all, or does medication work, you know. In Canada, we have some harm reduction programs, you know, methadone clinics and things like that, and safe injection sites in Vancouver, British Columbia. So it's kind of an endless topic to write about, and I certainly am interested in writing about it. I mean, there was a point where I thought, oh, I can't possibly even write that word itself, addiction, anymore. It's like I can't even say it and think about it. But you know, I got over that because again, like I mean, it's I made, you know, I've accepted it, I have adapted it, and you know, I'm happy to explore it further. So,
well, it was, I thought, you know, I was thinking about that as you were talking, that some of the, you were very sympathetic and kind of portraying some of the people that were in rehab with you, you know, and you, and I should mention that you go to rehab early in the book, or midway, you know, mid early in the book, and that doesn't work. But the people that you met there, I thought you were very loving in your portrayal of them. You know, you're very sympathetic to them and treated them not as, you know, kind of stick figures. They were real people and given their own agency in that sense, that you know, you're trying to understand how their addiction and your addictions were, your addiction are maybe related or similar or different. I mean, some of it is in the period when you're in denial, you're using them as examples of what you are not. But obviously, we as the reader know that you're fooling yourself. But it's, you know, I think there's a lot of richness in storytelling about people who are in, I mean, a lot of the personalities of people who are addicted are really interesting personalities. You know, they have, there's a lot to talk about there.
For sure. Yeah.
So when you had mentioned earlier that when the book came out in Canada, there was a sort of negative reaction. Maybe now, could you just tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I probably shouldn't interpret it why there was a negative reaction, but certainly, I mean, you know, people treat it, and I'm sure they will in the States as well, as, you know, it's a scandalous topic, you know, mom who drinks, and, you know, how dare she talks about it. And so there was, you know, the first article that came out in Canada was, it was a profile, and it was very scolding. I mean, I actually didn't think it was that bad until people started telling me how bad it was. So, and, you know, and there were reviews that, of the book that completely, you know, skipped the whole writing and the silly, you know, part about, you know, it being a book, and just talked about my personal life and my motivations to write it. So I don't know. I don't know if I would treat these as book reviews, but they certainly came out as book reviews. So there was a lot of, and you know, there was a lot of debate about a female writing this sort of story, and you know, this whole, the whole, you know, sacredness of motherhood, and you know, I guess people try to distance themselves from me, and you know, the maybe the fact that I was, you know, an urban mom who was, you know, relatively accomplished and with two university degrees and you know, lovely husband and a house, maybe that was threatening, right? Because then there was this dark, terrible secret happening as well. So I don't know if it was personally threatened, but I mean, addiction in itself provokes a lot of, you know, strong reactions. I mean, people are either compassionate or they're completely dismissive of it. It seems that there's no gray area. You know, no one says, I don't know, I don't care, right? It's always like, you know, I hate junkies, or it's like, I feel sorry for them, or I can, you know, empathize. So, but yeah, in media, I mean, it was about, I don't know, if you take percentages, it was about, you know, 70% kind of oh my sort of reaction, and then, but then also there was some support also from media, and you know, I mean, in Canada I got to the point where there was media commenting on media, you know, people writing essays about, you know, me being a woman writing this sort of story and things like that. So, but just to give you one more example, and I'll shut up after this, is we had a memoir come out, I think in 2007, written by a dad who, you know, a guy who had two children who was addicted to crack cocaine. And it was published. I mean, it was, you know, it was, I don't know if you could put degrees to it, but it was much more gritty and I guess heartbreaking. There were two children involved. It was published, it came out, there were a few stories about it, and it just, that was it. You know, so even the way a male addict and a female addict who are parents are treated was quite jarring.
And yeah, no, that makes sense. I think people do have this sort of romanticized notion of motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also is threatening to people in some ways, mm-hmm. you know, for you to reveal this element, you know, of a person. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. I understand, you know, it makes sense that there's a, you know, not necessarily that I agree with it, but it makes mm-hmm. sense that some people would react that way just because sure. of the nature of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe it would be interesting to see if the reaction is different in the U.S., you know, over the next period of time after the book comes out,
mm-hmm.
Or has circulated and has, you know, been written about. But I think it's really, for me, it was very, it felt like an important book, that you took this risk, that you were willing to share your personal story in this way. I thought it was very powerful, and I do understand, but I don't agree with the negative reaction.
Thank you.
At all. And yeah. So, you know, I'm just really impressed with the book. So, well, one last question.
Sure.
Who are your influences in literary writing, contemporary mm-hmm. influences? You know, I mean, there are lots of writers who have written personal memoir on painful subjects, but mm-hmm. I'm just sort of curious whether, you know, who you would point to as progenitors for you mm-hmm. as a writer.
Oh, I made a little list, but then I thought I can't remember half of them. So, but I will. I'll mention Canadian ones, and then I'll sort of go from there. So, you know, Barbara Gowdy, who's a she wrote a beautiful book called The Romantic. She's a Canadian author, her language is just exquisite, and the way she describes topics. And The Romantic, the book is actually about a woman's relationship with an alcoholic. So that's related to my story. But it certainly, I don't know if it was influenced, but it was perhaps the first book that I read that treated an addict with a very compassionate eye. So that's related to the topic, and I do love her writing. And, you know, an author, Sheila Hedy, who wrote this fantastic fiction that, you know, people thought it was a memoir called How Should a Person Be? It made quite a splash. And she's a local writer, and I do love her writing. Tamara Faith Berger, another Canadian writer who writes quite beautifully and quite bravely about sex, we don't write about sex in Canada, by the way. It's not allowed. So, so she's quite unusual in that she takes a lot of risks. My partner Russell Smith, who's, you know, he's a Canadian writer. He has been published in the States and Germany, and you know, he's someone that certainly influenced me because he teaches writing. He's a published novelist, so you know, we've had very long discussions about editing, and you know, he's certainly helped me with my English a lot, and I love his books, and I'm totally biased, but maybe I'm not. I mean, he's quite accomplished. But an old favorite is Michel Houellebecq, French author. I kind of love his characters. Very, you know, he writes from first person point of view, and they're just kind of cold and sociopathic, but deeply troubled and even romantic, I would risk saying. And the book Platform, that is probably my favorite book. But I mean, I read a lot, and I read kind of, you know, authors that I love, but I'm also open to reading, you know, what I called airport fiction. So, I mean, it's kind of all over the place. In terms of memoir, to writers that I don't read memoirs, I don't really love them. I find a lot of them have this kind of, you know, pattern of, you know, bad, okay, and then good, and the end, and it's, you know, the ending is very cute, and we sort of ride off into the sunset. I'm not going to give away my ending, but I'm here talking to you as a sober person, so that's kind of the ending. But if I were to pick two authors who've written memoirs, it would be Bill Clegg, who wrote The Portrait of an Addict as a young man, who certainly was an influence in his use of dialogue or approximation of dialogue, and I found his memoir quite heartbreaking. And David Carr, he's a journalist who wrote a memoir called The Night of a Gun, who is, I mean, the book in itself is quite a fantastic experiment. He goes back and reports on his own life, on his addiction. He interviews people who were around him during, you know, his addiction, the way a reporter would, you know, write a story, completely distance himself from the topic almost. So, yeah, I think that's about it. And then there's like probably a million others that I'm forgetting.
So. No, that's great, though. It's great that you mentioned Canadian writers that I doubt that many Americans, and of course my listeners could be all over the world, but I think Americans and other readers need to know more about Canadian literature. So I'm really glad you mentioned those. Well, I want to thank you, Jovita, for talking to me. And really, I love your book. I think it's really a great thing. And I'm really happy to get a chance to talk to you.
Thank you so much, David.
And so this has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I've been talking to Jovita Biedlowska about her book, Drunk Mom, a book I really recommend.
Thank you so much.